Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
No, I don't want you to worry, class. These tests will have no effect on your grades. They merely determine your future social status and financial success, if any. Remember to visualize the complex problems. And relax. The test will start now.
Thank you, Mrs. Krabappel. The SAT, the PSAT, and the AP, chances are these are not your favorite acronyms, but for the college bound, they're veritable rites of passage. Take out a number two pencil and a bubble sheet. The SAT, the PSAT, and the AP are all A, administered by the College Board, B, administered by a not-for-profit organization, C, administered by an institution that made over $55 million in 2006, or D, all of the above. Well, as you probably guessed, and as our guest Chadwick Matlin can tell us, the answer is D, all of the above. Chadwick Matlin is the staff writer at thebigmoney.com, a business site from the Slate Group. Last week, he wrote a commentary on the College Board and the surprisingly for-profit nature, he says, of the standardized testing industry. Let's go inside the testing industrial complex. Chadwick Matlin, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be with you.
We've all heard the name. What is the College Board?
Well, it started in back in 1900 as a group of member colleges that wanted to have a national entrance exam because they didn't want to have students take a different test to get into each different college that they were applying to. And so it's evolved now into a very large organization that still has members that aren't just colleges, that are also high school guidance counselors and admissions officers and the like, and now it sort of is this large organization that basically facilitates the process of getting into college in America for many students.
You wrote in your piece that the College Board is money hungry and has what you call a mean revenue streak. What do you mean by that?
Well, the College Board is a nonprofit institution, so it is afforded all the tax breaks and all that the tax code affords nonprofits. Yet, what we've seen is increasing revenue for the College Board over the last decade, since their new president has come on especially, and different initiatives to try and maximize revenue as much as possible, different tests that they're creating, different extra fees if you need to get an extra transcript, for example. I believe it costs $10 or $12, and if you need anything extra, there's always a charge. And so there's a real impetus put on bringing as much revenue in as possible, and the College Board says so that they can create new programs and services to help educate kids.
And what's the difference between the College Board and the Educational Testing Service?
A question that has baffled many. The Educational Testing Service are the people who actually administer and score many of the tests. And so the SAT, for example, I believe is sort of shipped out to them, and they do the scoring. And there's a real symbiosis between the two. When I was researching the story, I put in some requests to the Educational Testing Service for comment, and once they heard that I was also talking to the College Board, the Educational Testing Service said, sorry, the College Board has asked us not to comment to you anymore, and you must run your request through them.
Interesting. One thing that you reveal, the president of the College Board was paid $673,000 in 2006. The president of the Educational Testing Service was paid $931,000 in 2007, I guess the last years that you have stats for. Do you want us to think badly of those high salaries?
Well, I mean, I think that's up to the listener. There is something to be said for nonprofits at least having the connotation of a more charitable, sort of cuddly organization. And people will be paid what they will, and certainly the industry, if you will, seems to have salaries at this level. Now, for example, the College Board brought in revenue of $55 million or so, profit of $55 million or so.
So in other words, and they, I guess they don't call it profit in a not-for-profit
exactly.
organization, but they had a $55 million revenue surplus in 2006.
Right. They brought in $55 million more than they spent. And so the question is, well, should that actually mean that SATs or AP tests or PSATs are cheaper, especially, let's say, when a school district is buying instead of the individual consumer?
What does it mean?
It means that they are investing in something. And so what happens to this $55 million is that it rolls over to the next year. And so it gets reinvested. Now, some of that is in salaries for their senior executives. I don't think you can pay $600,000 to your president unless you have the revenue to justify it. And it also means that they're trying to steal themselves and amass as much market share as possible because there are competitors. ACT out of the Midwest is the main other college entrance exam that has been making inroads more recently, and there are for-profit scoring, testing scoring services. Pearson is one example that is also making a run at some of the scoring end of things, and there's a real question of what happens when colleges say, we don't care about the SAT anymore, which is happening more often. We're at about a third of colleges now say that SATs and ACTs are optional to get into school.
Listeners, we can take your phone calls and web posts on the business of testing inside the testing industrial complex. How much money have you spent on College Board products? What have you always wanted to know about this industry, this not-for-profit industry, but didn't have anyone to ask? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Hey, I've got a question. If the College Board is a nonprofit and classified as a public charity, why isn't the fee to take the SAT tax deductible?
A great question, one that I asked, and the answer is that also because of the tax code, anything that that a nonprofit gives you as a service or anything you get in return, so for example, this test, it's essentially a purchase, and as a result, it can't be tax deductible. So the $45 for the SAT, the $86 for the AP, the $13 for the PSAT, those are all technically considered transactions. And the concern is that it still goes as part of the revenue for a nonprofit institution. And so the question is, well, should that actually be classified differently on the tax return and that kind of thing? And we've seen in the nonprofit hospital industry some rumblings in Washington that you should only get nonprofit certification for the actual charitable acts that you're doing. So helping the poor, helping those who don't have health insurance, which is part of the charitable mission of the nonprofit hospital. And so there's a parallel to make there.
Right. And I should point out that in a letter to the editor of your publication, The Big Money, the College Board responds to your piece saying that other tax-exempt organizations like colleges and museums also charge for services. So that's their point. But what are you after here? Do you want something to change? Do you want the College Board to charge less for the SATs? Do you want the tax code to be changed so the College Board has to be categorized as a for-profit organization and pay taxes? What are you going for?
I think it may be time for us to think about the nonprofit tax code and whether or not we're okay with a nonprofit carrying this large amount of revenue from year to year. I talked to a nonprofit tax specialist who said that this is common for nonprofits who are donation-based, so who have to do fundraisers just in case fundraising dries up in a bad economy, such as this year. You can have a surplus to rely upon. The thing with College Board is that this isn't fundraising. This is not donations. There is an established market for the testing industry. It may go down in a down economy because people take fewer standardized tests because they don't take two or three SATs. They just take one.
And you do conclude the article with a relatively downbeat outlook for the College Board now that we've talked about all the money that they've made.
Right. And there is a real question about whether they can survive given certain market indicators that are saying that the education community may be moving away from standardized testing. So as far as what I'm after, I think it may be time for Washington, as it has with hospitals and even colleges, to start thinking about whether or not we should really be classifying these testing services as nonprofits. And they did this before the financial crisis hit. The Senator Grassley, Republican out of Iowa, making rumblings about whether or not to force colleges to pay a certain amount of their endowments every year, since that's part of their nonprofit mission is to help kids get into school with financial aid and that kind of thing. And there may be a question of what's the College Board's charitable mission? You know, is it fulfilling that? And that's a question that's not really addressed, I don't think.
James in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Chadwick Matlin from TheBigMoney.com. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you? My question involves Kaplan testing services and the College Board's role in getting No Child Left Behind passed, because I've heard that they had pushed heavily for the inclusion of a standardized testing requirement for state standards. I really don't know very much about this, so could you elaborate on this? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for your call. Did they lobby for No Child Left Behind because there's so much standardized testing in it?
I'm not familiar, although I do know that they were a big beneficiary of it, so it may stand to reason that they had something to do with it. I know that a lot of these standardized tests go through ETS, the Education Testing Service, which again is very much intertwined with the College Board, and certainly more of a environment of standardized testing in this country helps the College Board and every other standardized tester because it makes it more of a mainstream idea.
But you said earlier that the outlook may be downbeat now for the College Board because school systems are starting to move away from standardized tests. Isn't it true that with No Child Left Behind, there's more and more standardized testing all the time?
Yeah, if I said school systems and I misspoke, colleges are moving more
colleges.
Away than school systems.
Right.
School systems are certainly still federally mandated to have these state standardized tests in place, but part of the College Board's agenda is to sort of have cradle-to-grave testing, if you will. But the cradle-to-grave here is 8th grade through 12th grade.
Right.
And they had a test planned, which they had to cancel because there wasn't enough interest, they say, because of the financial crisis, to start testing college-ready skills in 8th grade, with the idea being that if teachers knew the skill sets of their students based on these standardized tests, that they would be better able to prepare them for college.
And here's a story from a satisfied customer, I guess, in the testing industrial complex on our website. SR from New Jersey writes, I don't know about others, but my son gave two PSATs before, I guess he took two PSATs before taking extra coaching for the SATs. And the fact is he is not a very self-motivated person who will actually sit and study or prepare for the SAT. He improved his score by 200. His math score jumped from 710 to 790, and I am happy to spend the money. In the larger scheme of things, this was a paltry sum, and we can afford it. He got his 2100 in the SAT. So this testing industrial complex is serving somebody.
Well, but that's the logical trap the College Board creates, because College Board has created the SAT. So without the SAT, that kind of situation doesn't need to happen in the first place, right? So we can't say that these test preps and the PSAT, et cetera, helps do well in the SAT, because the SAT is also a College Board product, and it's all part of a recursive system that they bring you into.
And Phil in Long Island City, another, I don't know if he's a lifelong learner, but Phil, you're a lifelong test taker?
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm just starting my PhD program at Columbia, and like one of my best friends from middle school is finishing his PhD at Princeton, and we're like a random Jamaican and Polish guy from West Virginia, and we started talking about the fact that we took the Stanford Binet when we were 6. We took the state test in West Virginia in 3rd and 6th grade. Then Johns Hopkins calls you for Center for Talented Youth. Then you take the it sort of changed our curiosity and talent into being fixated on the scores. I wonder who's being passed over, because I don't know, like, is it that much of an insight when you're in 6th grade to be told you're in the 99th percentile? Does that serve? Does that help society in some way, that we've so narrowly defined what an intellectual file looks like, that me and Curtis pretty much would have known when we were 11 that we would go Ivy at some point, that we would get terminal degrees? I don't think it serves us or the other kids who are left behind somewhat erroneously when, you know, we were all children.
Well said. Well asked. Chadwick Matlin, do you engage at this level of the usefulness of these tests to society at large, or are you just looking at the business side?
That's an educational question, which I'm happy to opine on, but certainly not qualified to. I will say that we also have to recognize that there is money to be made here. And that is a big driver for a lot of this, is that there's federal money that's floating around and there's state money that's floating around that the schools need to spend. And so these kind of testing companies crop up and say, oh, we have a solution. We can help you better identify skills in your students or help you be accountable so that when the government comes calling, you'll be able to have actual evidence and quantifiable data to back up why you held back a student or promoted him to the next grade.
Ken in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Yes, I taught in the an inner city high school and had to proctor, this is in New Jersey, and had to proctor the batteries of these tests every year. And this discussion needs to be discussed in terms of the students. I just want to say that I once counted, and the battery of tests ran for 19 hours. That was 19 hours of time on task or time on test. And that meant that that was 19 days of lost learning per year, because the batteries of tests took a half a day, which meant that the rest of the day was just simply shot. That did not include the makeup tests. But by the way, I'm not including in this the SAT tests, which were taken on a Saturday. Also, by the way, the security around this testing process was so intense that it was nerve-wracking. So
Describe the security.
To discuss this in terms of just the whole sense of loss of education for the student.
Takes so much time out of actual learning, you're saying. Thank you. And Tim in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi, Brian. I just have a question about why these exams should cost as much as they do. I just recently finished medical school, and I'm taking step three of the U.S. Medical License Exam. It's almost going to be $1,000. Steps one and two were each about $1,000. And then there's the test prep that is almost mandatory for competitiveness, because it seems everybody else is doing it. I know students that are taking out student loans just for these, and it's become, you know, it's come to the point where, you know, the testing is becoming more important than the facts that they're trying to, you know, see if you know or not. And it just seems, why are these things as expensive as they are, especially under the guise of, you know, non-profitability?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I wonder, and we're just about out of time, Chadwick, but are the tests differentially priced depending on what field people are going into? If you're going into medicine or law, are these specialized tests more than, you know, the ceramics SAT-2?
Yeah, so I will say, though, that the upper graduate tests are not run through the College Board, but the GRE, for example, which is the main test to get into graduate, blanket test to get into graduate school, costs $150, but ETS, Educational Testing Service, administers it and says that just said that if you're unemployed in this economy, it's only $75, not $150. So there is some reflection of the times that we're in.
TheBigMoney.com is the website. It's a business site from the Slate Group. And writer Chadwick Matlin had a commentary last week on the College Board and the surprisingly for-profit nature, as he sees it, of the standardized testing industry. Chadwick, thank you for taking us inside the testing industrial complex.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, the return of haggling. Stay tuned.